11-ranked Marquette Golden Eagles beat Butler 79-69. Now that WGTD forecast from the National Weather Service on this Thursday, February 21st. Should be mostly sunny, windy, and seasonal today. A high heading for 33, with winds up to 30 miles per hour. Tonight, partly cloudy and cold, a low of 13. Friday, partly sunny and a high of 36. The numbers right now, wind southwest at 7. It is sunny and 23 degrees across the board. Racine, Kenosha, Burlington, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. WGTD News Time, 8:11. The Morning Show with Greg Berg is next.
Support for the Morning Show comes from Carthage College, welcoming approximately 150 full-time transfer students each year. Eligible Gateway graduates can receive guaranteed admission to Carthage to complete their bachelor's degrees. Transfer to a more personalized education in 4 easy steps. More information about admissions and competitive scholarships for transfers is available at carthage.edu/admissions/transfer. And we welcome you to the Thursday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. I am really pleased and honored to once again be sitting across the table from Dr. John Swallow, the president of Carthage College, for just our second Morning Show conversation. We welcomed President Swallow into our studios very shortly after he became president of Carthage, officially on the job as of July 1st, 2017. And since then, it has been a very busy time, both for President Swallow and for his wife, Cameron Swallow. They have become already treasured parts of the Carthage community, and President Swallow is here today on the Morning Show to, among other things, talk about his vision for Carthage and some of the predominant themes by which he hopes to lead Carthage into a very, very bright future indeed. And we'll be talking about some other sort of specific things going on at Carthage and get from him some of his thoughts on what this opening to his tenure at Carthage as president has been like for him and for his wife. And President Swallow, we welcome you back to the Morning Show.
Well, thank you, Greg. I'm glad to be here.
Even at 7 in the morning?
Even at 7 in the morning.
We appreciate it. Thank you for making time for it. We appreciate Brandon Rooks, who is in the media department at Carthage, for helping to facilitate this and for bringing you here safe and sound today. So remind our listeners, especially those who maybe didn't hear our initial conversation back in the summer of 2017, where you were in your professional life at the time that this opportunity sort of came across your path to become president of Carthage College.
Sure. So I'd spent 6 years at the University of the South, or Sewanee in Tennessee, which is my alma mater, and I'd come back there in 2011 as the provost. And so that it was a wonderful time. I learned a lot. I learned about how our university operates, gained additional responsibilities, and I would say did some things that were quite proud of, expanding the number of students and doing a tuition initiative. But by the end of those 6 years, my two children had gone to college. Cameron and I felt like we had put in some very good time at our alma mater, and frankly, we're looking for a new adventure. And we were open, perhaps more open than we'd been in a very long time, now that our children were gone. And so we were open to being at another liberal arts college, practically anywhere in the country that seemed a good fit. And so we were delighted when this opportunity came through.
Before we talk about your time at Carthage, I want you to just highlight one aspect of what you did at your alma mater as provost, because it sounds like an uncommon arrangement in terms of the scope of responsibilities that were yours. And I'm asking you about that because I also want you to maybe speak to the ways in which that helped equip you for the challenges you face now at Carthage.
Well, when I came to Sewanee, I was working for President John McArdle, and At his former employer, Middlebury College, he had been a provost and then the president there. And he began very much to appreciate the model where the provost at Middlebury was really a chief operating officer, and so had responsibility across the institution. So when I came to Sewanee, he said that was what he would like to move toward. Maybe not initially with me, because I had a lot to learn. But so over time, I ended up with more and more in my portfolio. Not only the deans of the Colleges of Arts and Science and the School of Theology, but also the business office, the library, practically everything except advancement and some capital projects, and the college chaplain. And so that experience gave me a wide variety of opportunities to think about how everything works. And I would say it was very rewarding. Now, I will joke that sometimes he thought that we could get to the point where he would have exactly one direct report, and so he wouldn't have any managerial responsibilities except to talk to me.
Right.
But we never did get there, and I don't think that would have been appropriate in any case.
That's interesting. I mean, I remember you describing the scope of your responsibilities. I don't remember hearing that this was a first for the institution, that the provost had not operated quite like that before you, understanding correctly.
The provost had not operated like that recently. The position at Sewanee was created in the 1960s after a management study. The former, or I guess the predecessor role, was called a dean of administration. And some of this is peculiar to Sewanee because it has two academic units. It has a College of Arts and Sciences and a School of Theology. And so it was difficult to imagine one or the other of those people leading the institution internally. And so the provost position has kind of gone back and forth.
Gotcha.
But John McArdle had a vision for what he thought it could be because he knew how he had operated within it before.
Right.
And he thought that could be effective and allow him to do things that would be of more value to the institution.
And I remember, at least sort of informally, one of us described it as almost being mayor because of the way in which you had to be dealing with all kinds of matters that one would not immediately think of as being the responsibility of a provost or, for that matter, a college president.
That's right. So Sewanee operates as an unincorporated municipality in which the university owns practically all the land. And so someone has to organize the garbage. Turns out that's the university. Someone has to worry about things like the copyrights to Tennessee Williams works, which the university owns, and which I had not had to come into contact with and think about whether to market the ebook rights or whether that would cannibalize the print sales and the production of the works. And then in another aspect, Sewanee owns 13,000 acres, largely forested, and so there are a lot of fire trails that have to be maintained. There are people growing weed that need to be taken care of once in a while. And then there are questions that I had never encountered, like, well, should we do a controlled burn in one of the compartments because it would be better for the forest?
Wow.
So this was really quite a wide scope of activities.
Wow. And I am guessing that that is not bad preparation for taking on what I'm pretty sure is your first stint as a college president.
That's right. It was great to have gone through a master plan process, to have thought deeply about facilities and deferred maintenance, to think about how the different divisions of an institution really ought to work together. One of the departments or divisions under me when I was at Sewanee was human resources. And so I got to think a lot about how faculty and staff could work together and have the education and training that's sometimes not typical for a small institution.
Mm-hmm. What was it about Carthage that was so ultimately attractive for you and for Cameron? I'm assuming this was a decision you very much made together.
Well, it could be that there wasn't a forest that I had to maintain and I didn't have to worry about the garbage or a police or fire force. But no, more seriously, I love the fact that Carthage has been able to, I'd say, zig when other institutions zag. It's made some very interesting and powerful decisions over time. The most notable is moving to Kenosha in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
I like to tell this story that there are a lot of institutions in small places, and I think I know a little bit about small places now, that today will wish they had been in a larger place. Carthage faced that 50 years ago and made a decision about it and moved here. And other institutions stayed where they were and invested more where they were, and so that's been part of their trajectory and their future.
Right.
So Carthage's ability to think outside the box, to do something different in each decade, That's very attractive and I would say unusual among small colleges.
Absolutely. And of course, some of those small colleges have managed to survive, some even to thrive, and others have not survived because they did not have the boldness or perhaps the opportunity to make a move like Carthage did.
That's right. That's right. So this is a challenging time for small institutions, particularly in small towns. And I would say for those institutions that want to maintain a very narrow approach to the education they provide, when the number of high school students coming out that will be interested in that sort of education will be either somewhat reduced or more reduced, depending on the area of the country.
Yeah. For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with Dr. John Swallow, who is the president of Carthage College. He assumed that office officially on the 1st of July in 2017, and your inauguration was sometime in the spring. I have fuzzy memory of it because, unfortunately, I had a musical engagement on my calendar down in Illinois. I had to be gone for all of those festivities. I still feel badly about that, but you have actually been on the job since July 1st, 2017. And it has, I'm sure, been a whirlwind. In a nutshell, what have these last few months been like? What kind of surprises have they posed to you?
Well, I would say I've spent the first 20 months doing a lot of thinking about what Carthage needs to be doing in the future. And so now here's the mathematician speaking again. On the 21st day of the 20th month, I think I have a clearer view of the things we need to do. So some of the surprises are that the pace at which the forces affecting higher education, affecting colleges, we knew they were coming. We knew that Carthage had been in a great place for years, but they're coming faster than we'd anticipated. So we need to pay more and more attention to enrollment. We need to make sure that the education we provide is particularly valuable and attractive. That's why we're launching our new Aspire program, a comprehensive four-year career development program for all students as a way to differentiate the institution in the traditional undergraduate marketplace. So that's something consistent with what we've been doing in the past. It's something exciting, but it's also needed in a day like today where you don't want to be a college that looks like all the others.
Mm, absolutely. Or like all the colleges from 20 years ago.
Right.
So one of the primary reasons you are here today is because of something that I think you officially unveiled just yesterday, namely your vision for Carthage. And ahead of us talking specifically about what that vision encompasses, I wonder if you could just explain the why behind this and if this is something that all college presidents typically do and do repeatedly, and was this something that you've known for a long time you were supposed to do, or is this something you sort of decided to do? What is sort of the kind of the galvanizing force behind the announcement of this vision for Carthage that you have?
That's a very good question, Greg. I think some college presidents offer a vision and some do not. In my view, if it's clear what a direction can be, if it's clear that the messages that you can test, let's say for my first 20 months, when you meet with faculty and staff and alumni, can resonate and become distilled and become very coherent, then you want to take that opportunity to crystallize that in a way that is moving, in a way that is inspirational, even aspirational, and offer that in as clear a package as possible. It's going to be at a 50,000-foot level or a 30,000-foot level. It's not at the point of strategies and metrics and targets and all of those things, but it offers people a reason to understand where the institution should be going over 5 or 10 years and what their contribution can be. And there ought to be a way for every single person to contribute if it is at that level. And to look at it another way, I've been through two strategic planning processes, and they generally come out in great places. But let's just say those documents are not very inspirational. No one gets up in the morning and has their coffee and says, gee, let's look at page 28 and item 400. I wonder how I can make a difference there.
Right. So the specifics of a strategic plan operate under the auspices of this, in a sense, greater umbrella.
That's right. I think if everything's operating well, it's not that the vision that I'm offering is fundamentally different from a lot of the aspects of the last strategic plan or the one that we can develop in the next year or two. But it offers a clearer umbrella based on current and future conditions under which the strategies and the tactics that we decide to come up with should be, I would say, more focused, narrower, clearer. Sometimes in planning processes, they just become, the scope is enormous. And people find a way to say, well, you know, my office needs a new printer. And that's true. But it's probably not going to rise to the level of the strategic plan.
Right, right. So who developed this? I mean, is this, in a sense, solely your creation, something that you yourself crafted? Or is this something that has sprung out of a little more collaboration in the sense that not one person ever develops a strategic plan, for instance?
Right.
But is this, in a sense, solely your own vision for Carthage?
Well, I would say it's my vision, and yet it's my vision that's come from lots of collaborative efforts, talking and listening for those 20 months. When I attend events and when I speak about Carthage, I offer views, I offer perspectives, observations about its history, what seems to be important, and then I listen a lot to what comes back. If I say something that doesn't resonate with people, this is one of those good Midwestern qualities, people will say so. they're not looking for conflict. They'll just say, John, I don't think that's quite right. And so over the 20 months, I've been doing a lot of that with the board, with alumni groups around the country, with faculty and staff, with students. You know, the inauguration was an example of that. I offered a speech at the inauguration, and people happily gave me feedback. And so I believe that the vision as it's laid out is highly consistent with what I've heard Carthage has been in the past and can be in the future, at least at that level of values and a mission. And so what it's doing is pointing the institution in ways that take that value and the mission and make it very important for the next 5 to 10 years.
So it has three essential components. And before we just spell them out, how long have you been working with this to shape this exactly the way you want it to be?
I would say in the fall, I started sketching this out. And the words were different. And, of course, I had lots of help, and I was sharing drafts with folks. But it was being crystallized in the fall, October, November. And again, I was seeking feedback from folks on executive staff and other people that I was interacting with. So December, I would say, was maybe the first real draft. And then I continued to get feedback and then refined it a little more. And frankly, I don't know that this is ever done down to a word level. The essential directions, I think, are done. But how it's explained, how it's brought to life, how it's expressed, that's probably going to continue to evolve.
Depending on who's listening.
Exactly.
Very good. Well, it begins with two very provocative words, educate expansively.
Yes, exactly. This is a time when Carthage is called, I believe, to educate more people in more ways. And what I like about Carthage's history is that this is not new. If we go back to 1870 in Carthage, Illinois, Carthage had a fairly expansive view then for what education could mean. What I mean there is that it was educating not only men but women in 1870, probably one of the first 50 private colleges across the country to educate women in 1870. It was offering business courses alongside the classics. And notably, yes, there was a music program where a band was on top of a roof. But it was that openness, which I would say is connected to a Lutheran notion of vocation, that we're educating people to make a contribution in the world. And so this is a both and. This is about developing them as people, their intellectual skills, their personal skills, but also we're educating them in a way that will make a difference in the world. And so it's that combination that I think we need now more than ever. We will have, I think, a robust traditional undergraduate student population, and we will continue to offer new programs there. But we should continue to offer more programs for more people, for adults, graduate students, maybe partnerships with corporations and nonprofits. I don't know what the boundaries are, frankly. I'd like us to think as expansively as possible about all the ways that we can educate others in ways that are good for them and good for Carthage. And so I think we'll be launching new programs in a variety of ways. But again, this is the 30,000-foot level. Which programs those are, we'll have to work on, and that will be an ongoing process.
Right. And we ended up cracking a joke before we went on the air about how educate expansively is not the same as educate expensively, although those two things hone very closely together. Part of this vision is to think in these expansive terms and yet in a way that's fiscally responsible, and that's an interesting challenge.
That's absolutely correct. I think colleges like Carthage, small private colleges, cannot continue to rely solely on traditional undergraduates for all of the revenue. There are limits to what families can pay, and I think we are reaching those limits. I know that's been said 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago. Every type of price tag seems to go higher. But, you know, the average amount of tuition that our families pay is $15,000 a year. Room and board is separate. And frankly, that's not changing much over the past several years. And so that is telling us what families can pay, what they perceive the value of a Carthage undergraduate education to be. And so we need to respond to that. At the same time, our expenses increase due to inflation and paying employees more. And so we need to diversify our revenue. And so why not educate more people?
Mm. I'm glad you brought up the matter of 1870 and the fact that Carthage was educating women at that early date, unlike most colleges across the country. And it's a nice opportunity to point out that Carthage plans to celebrate that anniversary of women at Carthage in this next school year in a really big way, it sounds like.
Yes, we're really looking forward to that. So we'll have a alumni gathering this summer to sort of kick off the year, and then we'll have a number of events and fundraising initiatives designed around programs that either apply to women or particularly for women. We're raising money for our softball field, for instance. Mm. And then next summer, we can have a celebration of all of that. And we noticed that 2020, the 150 years, also coincides with 100 years of women's suffrage in the United States. So there's an extra bonus for
Absolutely.
This project.
Absolutely. Are there other ways beyond new programs where you feel like there are possibilities to for Carthage to educate more expansively? And I'm thinking in particular about who it educates. Are there ways in which Carthage should be, as you've already hinted at, thinking beyond what we think of as the traditional undergraduate student? And if so, what would be at least some of those ways in which Carthage could think more expansively?
One program we've been talking a lot about this year is an RN to BSN program. And the faculty recently approved the conceptual design of it, progress on that. And so that would be new for Carthage. Now, not nursing. We have a residential four-year program for nurses. The first cohort is graduating this year. Been a great success. Really a boon for Carthage. But we also know, because we want to be responsive to the community, that there are a lot of nurses with an RN degree who would like the education that takes you from an RN to a BSN. That tends to add to the technical education, a lot of the liberal arts education that Carthage is happy to do. And this will be good for hospitals who tend to want more BSN-accredited nurses for their rankings, their accreditation, but also because the health outcomes are better for patients the more education nurses have. That's not rocket science to think about, but the more education that the providers have, the more possibilities there are for patients to receive great care. So this is an opportunity that's great for Carthage, it's great for the nurses, it's great for society altogether. And so that would be one way in which this would be a departure for Carthage. Those students are likely working. Many of them have families. So they're not going to come to campus for a year during the day. So we'll have to think about different models of education. They may come on the weekend. There may be some online components. Mm. And so it's a new population. I don't think it will affect the undergraduate program particularly because it's a separate program. But it will provide a way for Carthage to educate more expansively and contribute to the region.
Very good. I know that something else that has been a real hallmark of Carthage's education for quite a number of years now is how aggressively it has moved into the field of studies overseas and experiences that take our students not only off campus but out of the country into far-flung corners of the world, actually. And is this something that you see not only continuing, but perhaps even expanding, if possible?
Yes, and what's exciting is to think about how our work and expertise in taking students abroad on study tours could have an effect on some of these new programs we offer. So, for instance, the RN to BSN program could have an international component. Our director of nursing, Frank Hicks, believes highly in preparing nurses to deal with populations that are different, and maybe not populations that only show up in a hospital, but populations that are in a downtown. He has some of our students working at the Racine Hospitality Center with a homeless population.
Wow.
So there's a wide diversity of populations that need to be cared for in different ways. And one way to help students see that very forcefully is to take them to a new country where they have to learn a lot of new things. And, of course, they still want to provide the care, but people may have different patterns of disease. They may have different ways of expressing it. The nurses themselves may need to behave in different ways. And so it's a great example of how something we were doing for traditional undergraduates we may be able to do in this program as well.
Wow, exciting. So the first tenet, again, educate expansively, and it sounds like you are thinking beyond those two simple words to envelop quite a lot of different things. Your second tenet, integrate regionally.
Yes.
This is probably the most, the one that is least obvious on the surface in terms of what its true thrust really is all about. So who or what is being integrated, and in what ways are we thinking about this regionally?
Well, I'll start by saying that if we're going to educate expansively and responsively, then we need to know what education is needed. And we need to know people who wish for that, desire that, have resources for that. And so it's great to be in a region of the country between the first and fifth largest cities in the Midwest, where there are a lot of people with those needs. Another statistic, 68% of working adults in Wisconsin are in the seven counties around Milwaukee. Well, that tells us that it is in Carthage's interest for us to help the state, but to help this region, if we are as connected as possible. So even in choosing the new programs, how can we get to know organizations here? Corporations, nonprofits, agencies, municipalities. There are lots of things in play that are already operating that can express to us what those needs are. So if we're going to do our work well, then we need to be as integrated as possible. We're a lovely institution on a campus by the lake, but we can't be seen as an island. I would love for everyone in Kenosha and Racine and beyond, from Milwaukee to Chicago, to know that Carthage is here, that Carthage people are doing something in their community, that it's a resource, it can be a partner. And we'll need to do our work on our end. We'll need to tell the story. We'll need to have more people not only come to our campus, but we'll need more people who are from our campus out in different communities. So that's the thinking behind integrate regionally.
I suppose that one of the things that's important to say about that is that there is a fair amount of that integration that already exists, and it is really important for Carthage to be right in the thick of that, or we are going to be left behind as other entities are connecting and collaborating and so on. If we are not a part of that, that would be a serious mistake. And not that we're not part of that, but clearly you see that the potential is there for us to be doing far more.
Absolutely. So again, the vision statement in my mind is continuous with Carthage's past, and it's taking advantage of all that we can build upon. So we do have a lot of community relationships. I'd just like to see lots and lots more, to have them be deeper, more powerful, more connected, to matter to more people. So in the same way that we've been offering an expansive curriculum in different decades in different ways, I think we have become integrated regionally some. But I would say that we need to think about how that's changed over time. When I talk to people in Milwaukee, they would say 20 years ago they didn't really know that Kenosha was here, because they would drive down the interstate and they didn't see anything. And now they very much know Kenosha's here. They know that Racine is here. It's starting to feel like a region around Milwaukee. Foxconn is just one element of that. It's not the only element of that. But as this place starts to grow and develop and people start to think about each other in these ways, Carthage absolutely needs to be a part of that in these new ways.
Absolutely. And it's interesting, implicit, I think, in this conversation is the fact that there are different ways in which it's really easy for a liberal arts college to not do that. That there are all kinds of ways in which a college can be its own kind of self-contained organism, its self-contained world, and not make a point of this kind of connection with the outer community. It does not just, in other words, it doesn't just automatically happen, and there are plenty of examples in which it ends up not happening at all, at least in any meaningful way. And I think you're right. Carthage has actually been an exception in really trying to avoid that. What do you think it is about small colleges where one has to make a concerted effort to not get just kind of wrapped up in one's own world?
Oh, that's a fascinating question. So I start by saying, well, colleges are part of the whole nonprofit sector. And the nonprofit sector tends to have organizations with important cultures that are really meaningful to people. Mm. And the thing about small colleges is the people they serve or the people they work with all tend to be right in one place. So while some nonprofits are reaching out across a community or even a state, colleges are very place-based. Mm. And so all the energy can be right within that place. And so when your whole world can be occupied in that one place, it's natural to think everything we're going to do is right here. And so that's part of the tension, or I'd say the balance. And that's why I'm particularly excited that the Lutheran approach to vocation has been outward-looking. It's not insular. You would go to a Lutheran college to prepare yourself to go somewhere else. If you're in a small place, well, that's absolutely true because you won't stay there. But if you're in a larger place like Kenosha in southeastern Wisconsin, you can come to a college but also be part of the community. And so it's that spirit that I'd love to continue to work with. Hmm.
This is also a nice opportunity, I think, for us to touch on something that's impressed me for a long, long time. And I think part of it is because we're sitting right now on the campus of Gateway Technical College where WGTD is located, and Gateway owns and operates us, actually. And I have done quite a number of things right up the road at the University of Wisconsin Parkside. So maybe more than most, I am so mindful of the really special relationship between these three institutions. And one could easily envision that existing in a real different way. I mean, on a very different frequency, which was much more about competition and much less about collaboration. And I continue to be struck by how collaboratively these three schools coexist in this community. And I know that's something that you care very deeply about.
Well, it wasn't long after I arrived before President Albrecht of Gateway and Chancellor Ford from Parkside said we all needed to have breakfast together. And that this wasn't new. This had been going on, the three leaders, for quite a while. They've been very welcoming. They provided some great advice to situations that I've called them and asked for their assistance on. There are moments where we can collaborate well with some of our programming. And I would love to see this or think of it as part of a collaborative nature in this part of the country. Mm. And I speculate that part of this comes from a region of the country that saw some very good days for a while and then encountered some challenges economically. The landscape changed. And then also has been able to pull out in different ways. So there's been growth and development, not only due to local leadership and the influx of some capital and businesses, but also because people here have kind of locked arms and said, we're going to get in there and we're going to continue to make our place better and better and serving more people. When I've seen places that haven't seen that success, either because the success has always been there in their whole lifetime, there's never been a problem, or because it's not been in a good place in their lifetime, they don't see a possibility. So coming in as an outsider here, I see that kind of spirit. And I think that Kenoshans and people in southeastern Wisconsin realize that if we're going to tackle some of the biggest issues, let's say housing, if Foxconn continues to develop and lots of people are coming in, we're only going to succeed if we do all this together. And we're going to need everybody to figure this out. This is not going to be something we can just say, I'm sure the mayor's office can take care of it, or I'm sure the economic development folks can take care of it. We're probably all going to need to come together. And so it's in that same spirit that I see the three higher education institutions together.
Mm. It's exciting to see. Third and final, communicate boldly.
Exactly.
We know something about communicating, but why does this belong in your vision, and why is this of such importance that it needs to be one of your three essential tenets for your vision for Carthage?
It's there because we need to place ourselves in the community when we integrate regionally. We need to place ourselves in front of others when we educate expansively, and we don't want to be modest about it. We have some great programs. We do some great things. I'm actually stunned over and over by how much is happening at Carthage that I wouldn't have known about had I not been in the right place at the right time. Mm. I had heard about Christmas Festival. Now, I'm a person who grew up Episcopalian. I've been to lessons and carol services my whole life. I thought, sure, I've got this. I know what it is. I had no idea. 300 students, three days in a row. I think we need to tell our story more strongly, and that this is definitely the time to do that. Not a time to be modest. This is not a time to think that, you know, we can just be incremental and everybody will take notice and then we can just keep on doing our own thing. So I think we have a lot of great stories to tell. I think we are doing a lot of great things. I think we'll need to do a lot more of that to accomplish the other two. If we really are going to educate expansively, we need to get out in front of people to tell them what we have to offer and how we can partner. And if we're going to integrate regionally, well, it's more of the same. We'll need to tell our story and tell it well, not in an inauthentic way. Of course, we need to be accurate, but we have a lot to celebrate and do. And it's not only the new programs. It might sound like this is only about advertising or offerings, but we will learn a lot along the way. We are learning a lot along the way. When the Aspire program has more and more students out in the community learning about partnerships, some of those partnerships will go well. Some will probably go less well. And I think we need to talk about that because it will help all of us develop better partnerships the next time. Not only Carthage, but Parkside, Gateway, other institutions across the country. It's reporting on that learning and just committing to communicating it that I think will make us all stronger. Mm.
And, of course, you're talking about this. We are having this conversation in what, in a lot of ways, is a much noisier world than it once was. And so there's a whole lot of stories out there in the air. And it probably behooves us to be thinking about this matter of bold communication more so than ever.
Well, I'm grateful to all your listeners on this show that are paying attention to one of the many channels we'll be trying to work through.
Right. So you unveiled this officially yesterday on campus. Tell us about that.
Well, I discussed this with the board earlier in the week, and I've discussed this with the President's Leadership Council, and the most important moment as we roll this out was to talk with faculty and staff yesterday. So I was so pleased to see so many people come on a day where, frankly, the weather wasn't so good. And even though our campus is compact, sometimes walking from the north end to the south end challenges some folks. But I delivered this in about 15 minutes and got some great questions afterwards. Mm. I believe that it crystallizes for many of the people in the room probably what they already knew. Again, if this feels totally foreign, it can't possibly work. Mm. And so I think it was consistent with what a lot of people thought we were doing, but it's a matter of emphasis and focus. And so I was delighted by the outcome of that.
Right. Yeah, I can see how if you stood up and said, okay, I've come up with these three bold ideas about Carthage that I'm sure none of you have ever thought of before, that would be one thing.
A recipe for disaster.
Yeah, I suppose. Versus let me put this into words what I see in terms of who we are now, what we are now, what we've been, and where all of this potentially could be headed. And even as I'm just saying that, I'm realizing that's what makes this important. I mean, an important thing to do.
That's right.
So you are touching on all kinds of different facets of Carthage. One of the things that's come up repeatedly in this conversation is something called the Aspire Program and or the Aspire Center, which has been really important to you. Explain to our listeners what this is all about and why you think it's especially crucial that it exists now.
Well, we know that high school students today are coming in to college differently than years ago. For instance, just to quote one statistic, there's been about a 20 percentage point drop in the percentage of high school students that work while they're in high school. Now, we could talk about whether that's good or bad, But it's simply a fact. And when I talk to parents on these successive Saturdays where they come to Carthage, I say that, and they all look they look at me like, yes, I know that. I feel this. It's different from when I grew up. So this is one of the ways in which colleges need to be responsive. We certainly hear a lot from parents about their desire to make sure that their students will receive an education and be able to get a job. We also hear from our own alumni, about 50% of them by a Center for Market Research Study, wish that they had spent a little more time thinking about their career while they were students at Carthage. So you put all that together, and it's time for us to emphasize more strongly a piece that's, I would say, been consistent over a long time, but needs to be emphasized more now, which is giving students assistance throughout the 4 years, beginning from the very first day, in thinking about themselves, their interests, how they can have a boundless curiosity about what they will be doing, but then also focus that over 4 years. So they'll definitely graduate in 4 years. They'll have experiences, internships and otherwise. They'll have courses in which they can think about how they interview, how they talk about themselves, how they package it together. The truth is there are a lot more occupations now than there were 20 years ago. Mm. I mean, it's thousands. The idea that you could say to someone today, well, you'll probably either go into business or you'll be a doctor or a lawyer or something like that. It's very complicated. And we know that students come in with all kinds of interests, and I think we need to provide more guidance. I think this the notion earlier that, well, let's just lay out all the choices in front of students and they should work through that. That's true when the choices are two or three or five, but when you start talking about hundreds of choices,
yeah.
I don't know how I would make a decision like that. So we were really glad to receive some significant resources to launch this. In 2016, we received a $15 million gift from the Tarbell Foundation for career development. And after a year-long task force of thinking about how we could do this best, we decided that in the spirit of Carthage thinking outside the box, we weren't just going to add a little bit to the Career Center and have a few more appointments available for students or have a few more internships, but we needed to commit to provide this to all students from the first day and integrate it into the experience. Part of the problem has been that some students think of it as an add-on. They wait till their junior or their senior year. Maybe not that because they wanted to, but just because it wasn't a priority. If it's a priority for everyone, if it's just part of the experience, then that's another way that we can provide the education that we've long provided, but do it in a way that differentiates us from other schools.
Mm. Well, it's certainly been exciting to see that come into being, and it will be great to see how it ends up making a difference in more and more students' lives in the years ahead. I wanted to be sure to take a couple of minutes to talk about the First Lady of Carthage, your wife, Cameron Swallow, and just give you an opportunity to talk about some of the things that she has done in order to really powerfully connect not only with the Carthage community itself, but with the outward community as well.
Well, she has loved exploring this community and meeting more people. And again, since we came from a town of 3,000, the opportunities here seem nearly endless to connect with others and do things. So she's found a number of initiatives that have become really meaningful to her. One is a Library of Congress project that she's spearheading in the community. The Library of Congress has a project of getting oral histories of different occupations over lots of decades. And perhaps not surprisingly, where they lack a lot of the oral history is in occupations that tended to have been performed by women. Mm. And one particular place is nursing. Well, there are a lot of nurses here. We have a lot of programs in nursing here. Carthage has its own program that's now having the first graduating cohort. And so she's been encouraging some of our students and faculty to connect with nurses in the community, particularly nurses who've had a long career, and develop some of that oral history. So that's been very exciting. And so it fits with Carthage and it fits with Kenosha in some great ways. More recently, she's been interested in a group called Better Angels that promotes discussions across political lines, difficult discussions. There aren't a lot of Better Angels organizations in Wisconsin, and so she's thinking about what she can do there. She's gotten very involved with the Kenosha Literacy Center. I hadn't realized that there are 41 different languages spoken in Kenosha County. And so it just tells you how much diversity is out there and all the work that we can do to make sure that people have the skills they need to work together in society. But I will say that probably the activity that gives her the most meaning is that she has recently been part of an emerging, you know how these things are, an emerging bluegrass band. They're calling themselves Flat Creek Highway. She was delighted to be able to do this by going to different places where there are, you know, jams and like Route 20 and so on. And you might have thought that people who live in Tennessee would have a really easy time forming a bluegrass band. Now, if you're in Nashville, it's no trouble at all. But again, if
it's
you're
hard not to form,
right? They're everywhere. Where we were, it was not hard to find people. The problem was they were so dispersed. You might find a great musician an hour away who's not already in a band. And so she's found a great group here. They played in Kenosha. They played at a bar in Silver Lake, and she just finds it incredibly meaningful.
Wow. Well, singing is important to both of you, and we should make brief mention that you yourself did a little cameo for the most recent opera production at Carthage, a little program of Gilbert and Sullivan called Give Three Cheers, in which you actually got up on the stage and did some singing. And I appreciate your willingness, and seems like something you enjoyed doing.
Oh, it was tremendously fun. I enjoyed it a whole lot in this frame of someone banning Gilbert and Sullivan, and then after...
That villain was you.
Yes, I was the villain. And I'll say that I recently sent an email to a business provider locally just asking whether on a personal basis I could engage in some of the work of this person, and the email came back, well, we don't accept any clients who ban Gilbert and Sullivan.
so the word is out. Fortunately, by the end of the program, you decided to rescind your decree, and everyone lived happily ever after.
That's
so,
right.
Well, the students were thrilled to collaborate with you in that way, and I know so many people harbor such warm, appreciative feelings about both you and your wife, Cameron Swallow, for all you've given to the institution thus far. In just these first 20 months or so. And I appreciate you coming to WGTD today to share with all of our listeners your vision for Carthage for the upcoming years, and look forward to many more conversations. And I thank you again for being part of the morning show today.
Well, thank you, Greg. It's been great being here.
Dr. John Swallow, the president of Carthage College. Tomorrow on the morning show, we will be previewing the newest production at the Racine Theatre Guild, the wonderful thriller Wait Until Dark. Remember that classic film starring Audrey Hepburn? Before it was a film, it was a great play on Broadway, and it is returning to the Racine Theatre Guild, and I'll be speaking tomorrow with Michael Klickner, who is the director of the production. Also on tomorrow's morning show, we will preview the performance Sunday afternoon at First United Methodist Church of concert pianist Wael Farouk, who is director of piano studies at Carthage. He will be playing a concert as part of the Fine Arts at First series. On Monday, Dr. Art Sear, Clausen Distinguished Professor of Political Economy and World Business at Carthage, pays his monthly visit to the program to offer his analysis of current events. On Tuesday, another college president joins us, Brian Albrecht, the president of Gateway Technical College, and we look forward to his conversation very, very much. On Wednesday, Steve Musenden from the Racine Literacy Council. And next Thursday, 1 week from today, I'm excited to share with you an interview that I recorded with Vivian Freed, the author of a book called Against Our Will, which looks at the way in which visual arts, beginning in the 1970s, began to take on one of the most important issues of the day, that of sexual assault. The morning show airs every weekday morning between 8 and 9 o'clock. The program is archived on our website, WGTD.org. Support for the morning show comes from Carthage College, welcoming approximately 150 full-time transfer students each year. Eligible Gateway graduates can receive guaranteed admission to Carthage to complete their bachelor's degrees. Transfer to a more personalized education in 4 easy steps. More information about admissions and competitive scholarships for transfers available at carthage.edu slash